Well, hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live daily afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Lynelle Engelmeyer joins us this afternoon. She is a certified educational planner, over 20 years of experience in college admissions and financial aid, currently has had her own college counseling practice. Lynelle volunteers to work with underrepresented students through a local and a national nonprofit, and is the author of a college admission and financial aid workbook entitled Moving Forward, What Teens and Parents Need to Know in the Years Leading to College. Lynelle, welcome back to the show. It's been a while.
It has been a while. Thanks, Ray.
Give us a call now, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can tweet us at WAMC Vox Pop. It's one word, WAMC Vox Pop. You can also leave your questions and comments on our Facebook page at facebook.com/WAMC Radio. Obviously, you only have 140 characters on Twitter. But you could be as detailed as you like on Facebook or give us a call at 800-348-2551. So, Lynelle, it has been, I'm guessing, 9 or 10 months since you've been on the program.
It probably has, yeah.
And you have been very busy. I know that you went to NACAC.
I did.
I had to say that once. Now, what is NACAC?
NACAC is the National Association of College Admission Counseling. It's a large professional organization, and they do a conference. They have an annual conference once a year, and it was about a week and a half or 2 weeks ago in Denver, where it snowed. Unfortunately, but it was great. It's always a great professional development opportunity. It's about 7,000 high school guidance / college admissions people. So it was a very enriching trip.
Well, did you learn anything new? Anything you didn't know before you went?
I always learned something. Literally, I always learned something I didn't know. A lot of the ins and outs of student recruitment, what colleges are looking for, sometimes what works, what doesn't work, what trends are. And so I always learn something new. I usually come home with a couple pages of notes.
Are colleges looking for different things than they were 10 or 20 years ago?
Yeah, actually, if you go back sort of 10 or 20 years, they are looking for different things. If you say 20 years ago, for example, it used to be that colleges looked for what we used to call well-rounded students.
Yeah.
You know, if you played a sport and an instrument and you got good grades and you did a little volunteering, that was fabulous.
Yeah.
And now that has kind of moved to the talk about the angular student.
Now, what does that mean?
Well, that means instead of having a lot of breadth but very little depth, you know, maybe you do a lot of things but none of them that deeply, they'd actually rather see a student who does fewer things in more depth. So, for example, if soccer is your passion or lacrosse is your passion, you might play for the school team, you might play for a club team, you might volunteer to coach little kids in your town or be a referee, and they like seeing the variety of ways in which you can have depth in something. You know, rather than being a member of several clubs at school, they'd much rather see you have less participation but do more with that. So if you're in Key Club, they want to know that you did something more than just show up at the meetings. They want to know that you coordinated a particular activity or a fundraiser or something like that, and that you exhibited some real leadership in that area.
But it would have to be in an area germane to your major, right? In other words, if I want to go in as music major and I got so deeply into the stamp collecting club, it shouldn't matter, should it?
Oh, it absolutely does. And I'll give you an example. I have there's a young woman who's at RPI right now who wants to or is pursuing some kind of major in engineering, something or other. I don't know exactly which one, but she is a brilliant musician. And her music was never something that she planned on pursuing as a profession, but it's a very important part of her life, mm-hmm. and she was very, very serious about it. When she was in school, she not only did she take private piano lessons for years and years and years purely for her own enjoyment, but she was also part of the pit crew in all the school shows, in some of the other ensembles, and she wanted to be able to continue that participation in college, and it was important for two reasons. Number one, it was an important part of her life, and she enjoyed it. It was important important to the college because it's something else she brings to them. Sure, she's a good student, and she would have been a credit to them had she done nothing more than just go to class and study, but these schools are all communities, and generally speaking, they want people who are going to enhance their sense of community. So if, in fact, you were a musician but have this real passion for stamp collecting, you know, you bring something else to their sense of community that either maybe they don't have, that they want to build or continue.
1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Linnell Engelmeyer joins us, as she does periodically, although it has been a while. 1-800-348-2551. You've also, in your spare time, created something quite wonderful, which you showed me before the program. It's called the College Application Wizard, collegeappwizard.com, and we will get into that in a little bit. But let's go to the phones at 800-348-2551. Pete in Amherst. Pete, you're on.
Yes. Hello, Ray, and hello, Linnell.
Hi there.
I'm calling about our granddaughter, who's 19 years old, and she was accepted to AMDA, which is the American Musical and Dramatic Academy. It's a conservatory in New York City. It's a two-year program, and the costs for those 2 years is going to be about $110,000.
Yikes.
Yikes is right. So far, we've raised from scholarships, grants, families, fundraisers, everything we could think of, about $75,000.
Pete, can I back you up 1 second?
Yeah.
She will be starting there next fall of 2013?
No, she was actually accepted back in the spring.
Okay.
But she had three possible start dates, I think June, September, and the last start date before she has to reapply is in February of 2013.
Okay.
So that's what we're shooting for to raise the extra money by.
Okay.
So our question is, we don't want to go with loans because we think it's going to be too difficult for somebody in that field to pay them back. And we're about at our limit for what we can do with our own money and our own funds. We're having fundraisers. We're having a big fundraiser in Amherst on November 10th because she can sing for her money, and she got $4,000 at her last performance from people who came to hear her sing.
Wow.
I know.
So
what do we do next?
Let me ask you a couple questions.
Yeah.
Of what state is she a legal resident?
Massachusetts.
Okay. It would seem to me, the first question is, has she gone through the process of applying for financial aid?
Yes.
Okay. So you've done that. That would obviously be the first
one. Yes. Yep. Part of the money we've raised, the $75,000, is our grants and scholarships.
Okay. From the school or through the school?
Yes.
Okay. Great. So one thing to remember is you're at $110,000 over 2 years.
Right.
Obviously, you don't have to pay that all up front. And one of my thoughts would be, I don't think taking a student loan is the worst idea in the world, because if there is some additional income over the next 2 years, if there are some other fundraisers that she can do over the next couple of years,
mm-hmm.
It gives you a chance to accrue that money. You know, the loan gives you that money up front. With a regular student loan, it's called a direct student loan. It used to be called the Stafford student loan.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing. There
right.
is no penalty for early payment, for prepayment.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you borrow, say, $5,000 today, there's no penalty if you pay that all off once it comes due. And it comes with a 6-month grace period.
Mm-hmm.
So it may be a way to kind of float a little bit of money.
Mm-hmm.
And you're probably looking, depending on the scenario, you're probably looking at about $5,500 per year.
Ah, well, that would be, sorry, that'd be $11,000 over 2 years, which would only give us another, you know, 20 or so to raise.
Yes. And like I said, that I say probably $5,500 because it
mm-hmm.
is probably the case. There could be a little caveat there, but it's probably $5,500.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the other thing, too, is, gosh, I would say that if she is earning, you know, you talked about her getting $4,000 for singing and for her performance. And again, you know, you don't have to pay that $110,000 up front. So if
right.
if that is something she can do over a period of time, and you're now down to under $25,000 mm-hmm. over a period of time,
mm-hmm.
You know, I have to say it's not a bad way to do it. And, you know, I really think that borrowing $5,500 per year for a 2-year program is not what I would necessarily consider overly burdensome. I realize mm-hmm. that in a perfect world, I wouldn't borrow anything either.
Right.
But if you're going to borrow, this might not be the worst way to do it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Unfortunately, the other thing, I will give you a website. I'll give you two of them, actually. The first website is called My College Options, OPTIONS.com.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The other one is Fast Web, F as in Frank, A, S as in Sam, T like Tom, Web,
right.
W-E-B.
Yep, we've been there.
Okay, okay. And those are, for anybody that doesn't know, those are scholarship mm-hmm. search engines. You key in a little bit about yourself, and it tells mm-hmm. you some scholarships that might be appropriate for you.
Right. We just haven't found many in the performing arts.
Right.
Unless you lived in a very specific area
mm-hmm.
and, you know,
right.
had certain very limited, you know, criteria.
And, of course, I don't have to tell you how incredibly competitive that field is either.
Right.
So it is
right.
it is hard. But really, at this point, if you've gone the route of applying for financial aid
mm-hmm.
And you've looked at the loan route, unfortunately, I don't know that there's a whole lot I can tell you other than it sounds to me like you all collectively have been pretty industrious about raising
mm-hmm.
some money.
If she's making right. $4,000 a gig, I think she's doing okay.
Well, this was from a pretty select group of friends and clients of my first wife in a wealthy community
yeah.
who were willing to cough up money because they knew her well. I don't think we're going to be able to repeat that. It
okay.
was
mm-hmm.
friends, really a lot of friends.
Yeah. All right. Well, Pete, good luck. We have a break here, and I appreciate it very much. Of course, you know, if you are making $4,000 a gig, you know, all my friends, well, most of my friends who went to Berklee Music School,
mm-hmm.
they end up taking jobs professionally before they graduate. So most of them don't graduate, but they're pulling in the bucks. All right, Zach, let's take a break. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. More with Linnell Engelmeyer coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from Quality Foreign Car Care, Boston Spa, New York. Sales and service of Audi, BMW, Mercedes, Volvo, Saab, Volkswagen, and Porsche, QFCC.com. Munson Williams Proctor Arts Institute, Utica, New York. Exploring the influence of sacred relics and ancient artifacts on modern interpretations, MWPAI.org. Curran Compliance Services, LLC, Greenwich, New York. Providing legal and consulting services to life insurers in a changing regulatory climate, CurranCompliance.com. Capital Wine at State and Lark in the heart of Albany, offering local and international wines, capitalwinestore.com. The Daily Grind Cafe, 46 3rd Street in Troy, offering breakfast, freshly baked pastries, soups, sandwiches, and desserts, open mic every Thursday night, dailygrind.com. And Interim Healthcare, providing companions, aides, and nurses in the home, 2 to 24 hours a day, so you or a loved one can stay in your home. Serving the greater capital region, Glens Falls, Saratoga, and the Berkshires, InterimHealthCare.com.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. 1-800-348-2551 is the phone number. Yes, you may tweet us if you wish. WAMC Vox Pop, all one word. Also, you can leave a question or comment on the show at Facebook.com, of course, /WAMC Radio. Linnell Engelmeyer is our guest. We're talking about getting ready for college in so many ways. And, you know, I asked what you had been up to when I saw you before the show, and you said, well, we developed this neat little website. And you gave me the quick kick the tires, and it really is quite something. It's collegeappwizard.com. And you just plug in the colleges you're looking at, and all, I mean, from what the way I see it, everything you need, from your test scores to what essays you need, I assume all the financials that you will need to hit. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. I have a business partner who's also in this same field, and for years we've lamented how hard it is to help teenagers particularly stay organized through this process because it's just kind of this morass of, you know, paperwork requirements, things like that. And what we found was a lot of the college search engines out there, which are really good, and they say, you know, let us help you find the college that's right for you. And then when it comes to applying, they all said, stay organized, which I didn't really think was really information that a 17 or 18-year-old could wrap their brains around. So we basically created Stay Organized. And what you do is basically you just enter the name of the school. It will tell you all the requirements and deadlines and deadline options for that school. And then if you're applying for financial aid, it will tell you the financial aid filing requirements and the financial aid deadlines, which is always a real, real sticky wicket and a real stress producer for families because there's so much riding on it. And so basically what we've tried to do is put it all in one space. There was no way to account for every possibility. And so what we did was we allow for customization. So, for example, if you are a musician and you need to send in an audition DVD, you can customize that. You can customize it for certain schools. So if you're, let's say you have eight schools on your account and only two of them need an audition DVD, you can specify that. You can set custom deadlines. So, you know, for example, a lot of schools have a January 1st application deadline. And your mother says, I don't want you sitting here December 31st writing your essays. You can set deadlines prior to that, and then you get reminders based on those deadlines. You can get text or email reminders. And then my favorite part about the whole thing was throughout this process, you have to create about 1 million user IDs on different websites, whether it's the college's own websites, whether it's the FAFSA, the financial aid application, the Common application, the CSS profile, which is another financial aid application. And each one has to have its own user ID. And nobody in their right mind can really keep track of all these. So what we did was we put a login locker on the profile page where you can put in the name of the entity or institution and your login so that you go to one spot and it's all stored there. So really what we tried to do was make some kind of systematic way out of approaching this. You can sort it by school, by date, or by task. So if you say, I'm going to spend this weekend writing essays, you can sort it by task and see exactly what essays you have to write for all of your schools.
And assuming that you file electronically, you could then upload those?
No, because what happens is the Common Application, which is how many applications are filed, is its own entity. But it will tell you, for example, if you have, I work with a lot of kids who apply to schools that are all Common Application schools. So they might apply to eight schools that all use the Common App. Chances are that many of those eight might also have supplemental essays. So they might ask you, you know, why do you want to go to Union College? Why did you choose engineering as a major at RPI? And oftentimes there are many more essays than just the basic Common App essay. And this will give you the format to record them all and to be able to see them. So you know, where is there some crossover? Is there any commonality for schools that don't use the Common App? What are their essay questions?
Interesting. You know, my question is, how do you keep updated with all the college's requirements?
Most of them don't change dramatically. You know, things change a little bit, and we sort of work tirelessly. In fact, it's basically somebody's full job to just sit and work and make sure that the database that we created, it's a custom database, is updated.
All right. It's collegeappwizard.com, college app being APP. So collegeappwizard.com, all one word. Let's go back to the phones and Michael in Hyde Park. Michael, thanks for waiting. You're on.
Hi. I've got probably an enviable position, but I'm not sure how to work it and whether it's going to work best for me and my daughter. I'm a faculty member at a college that is industry-specific. We offer an associate's degree of occupational studies and a bachelor's of professional studies that are targeted towards a specific niche. And one of the perks of my job is that my daughter or my children can attend tuition-free. They can earn a bachelor's degree tuition-free. Now, my daughter is not particularly interested in pursuing that as a career, but my thinking is who these days can give up a free bachelor's degree, and I'm suggesting that she consider using this as sort of a starter college or a springboard. Earn a degree, find out what it's like to be in a college environment, And in the meantime, the money that I've saved for college can sit, can gain interest. She can work part-time job and contribute. And when she's finished, when she's 21, she has a bachelor's degree. It's viable. If her GPA is high enough, she can transfer either to another school for another bachelor's degree or springboard into a master's degree program someplace. And we use the money that we saved to defray those expenses. My question is this too good to be true, or am I limiting her in some way by trying to steer her into an industry-specific degree?
Okay.
And without knowing what the school is and what the industry is, it's a little bit harder to answer that question. You know, I guess in a perfect world, if you were independently wealthy and you could write a check, sure, you know, certainly let her pursue her dreams and what she wants. But that's not the reality most of us live in. And I think there is a lot of merit to what you're saying. I guess my theory would be that if the field that she would get the degree in is even reasonably close to something that she has some interest in, there'd be some real merit to it. I think, did you say that the two-year degree was an OT degree?
It was an AOS.
What is that?
Studies.
Ah, okay.
And then the Bachelor's of Professional Studies is largely a management and liberal arts finishing degree that overlaps with the AOS. So you get an occupational degree, and then you get a management and liberal arts studies degree that allows you to have a bachelor's degree on top of the AOS.
I think the thing that I would be careful of is, you know, the transferability of that degree specifically. One of the things that may be kind of the happy medium there is, can she take some core courses over the first maybe year or two that would then transfer somewhere else? So if she, you know, had a career interest in mind, an area of study in mind, could she do some of the core coursework that would transfer to another institution? And the thing you have to be careful of there is that institutions are very specific about what they will accept as transfer credit, and that decision is made on an institution-by-institution basis. And schools have, I think, probably gotten a little more stringent about what they're willing to take. One of the things you may want to do is go get some kind of sampling of what would they accept. Even if she got a first bachelor's at your institution and moved on to get a second bachelor's somewhere else, I think you'd want to know how much are they going to accept from that first bachelor's degree. The other piece is that when you move into any kind of graduate degree, master's degree, anything like that, the odds or the options for grants, money that does not need to be paid back, goes down significantly. Much of the grant money is reserved for students who have yet to earn their first bachelor's degree. So that could be a potential downside of either a second bachelor's or a master's degree, is that if you're going to apply for financial aid, it is reserved largely for the first bachelor's. But I think your biggest issue that I'd be very careful of is, what is the transferability of these credits?
Good.
Okay.
Michael, thanks a lot. 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Lynelle Engelmeyer is our guest. 1-800-348-2551. Lucy in Rensselaer, you're on.
Hi. This may be slightly off topic, but it relates nevertheless. My daughter is in mid-30s, she's married and has a son who is 3. She has a bachelor's degree and has been working in retail for the last 8 or 10 years. She would like to become a Montessori teacher and has been exploring what the options are where she lives, which is in state of Tennessee, or at least in the southeast there. Are there any... She really does not have any kind of extra income for making any kind of tuition payments. So I was wondering if there are any resources that might be available to her.
The interesting thing about the Montessori programs that I'm not sure about is you would have to see, are they eligible to disperse federal aid? If they are, then you could potentially get a student loan to cover the tuition. And I don't know the answer to that off the top of my head.
Mm-hmm.
I would think that the best place to call would be a Montessori school and
right.
talk to them about what kinds of options there are, either for payments or for loans or things like that. But
right.
again, once you have that first bachelor's degree, much of the funding, particularly at the master's level, is in the form of loans. And if I'm understanding correctly, I don't think that the Montessori Teacher Certification Program is a degree program. And usually for federal aid, it must be a degree program.
Interesting.
Mm.
Okay.
So,
right.
you know, just for example, if I walked out of here today and I decided that I felt like taking a class at a college near here just because I felt like it, I could not get that covered by any kind of federal aid, including a student loan. I have to be a degree candidate at that school.
Okay.
Okay.
Lucy, good luck.
Okay, so basically you're saying there are no resources that would be available.
Well,
right? Unless...
There are none that I'm aware of. But,
right.
You know, when you're talking about the Montessori programs, it's a little more specific. And, you know, they may have one or two tricks tucked in their pocket that I am unaware of.
Mm.
Like
okay.
a payment plan, for example.
All right, Lucy.
Like a what? I missed that.
Like a payment plan, for example, she said.
Okay. All right. Okay.
All right. Thanks, Lucy.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye. So, you know, you've mentioned now twice that most of the federal grants, and by the way, the number to call, 800-348-2551 for Linnell Engelmeyer, 1-800-348-2551. So, Linnell, you mentioned now twice, most of the federal money, the grants, are only available to those who have not yet had, you know, have completed a degree. Is this, why are they doing this? Just to keep away from the professional students, so-called?
No, you know, money's finite, and I think in prioritizing, they have said they're going to focus the grant and, you know, grant money on students without a first bachelor's.
Hmm.
And, you know, I think that is the reason, you know, and there are, that doesn't mean there aren't other ways to go about funding things. So, for example, let's say you want to go to medical school.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean loans are the only way to fund it, although it's certainly the largest chunk of it.
Yeah.
But what happens is there are programs, for example, that will pay part of your medical school debt off if you go into an underserved area, if the military will pay for it.
Yeah.
So oftentimes, there are other ways to go about funding things, but as grants are concerned, and a grant is, you know, basically gift aid, it doesn't need to be paid back.
Right.
Those are reserved largely for students who have yet to earn their first bachelor's degree.
All right. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Bernadette in Poughkeepsie, you're on.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is about my son. He's going to be turning 25 next June. He's been working since high school, but he really should be in college. He did exceptionally well in school. He probably could have been put ahead maybe two or three grades. His interest would be in probably MIT, Harvard, someplace like that. And I'm wondering if how they treat older students, first-time students, as far as scholarships and approval.
Has he done any college work?
Very little, and it really didn't apply. He was doing things like learning construction and for maybe one semester.
Okay, but he was not enrolled in a degree program somewhere?
No.
Okay. Then I believe they will see him as a true freshman. Regardless of his age, he would technically be a true freshman. Which is good news as far as financial aid is concerned. And so essentially what's going to happen is, and because he's 25, he will qualify as an independent student. The definition of what is an independent student is pretty rigid. And basically you check yes or no to a series of questions. And if you check yes to any one of them, then you are an independent student. And by virtue of the fact that he is over the age of 24, he is an independent student, which means that your income or parental income will no longer be counted. It will, however, look at the money he has been earning And it will take a look at that. As far as colleges go and looking at his and acceptance, I don't really think that there would be any bias, any negative bias towards somebody who is older at all. I think that they will want to look at his high school transcript. They may or may not still choose to look at standardized test scores. But the other thing that I think they're going to look at is what has he done with that time in between, or how has he grown in that time in between? You know, and then I think the next piece that you have to look at is, you know, at 25, what are his housing options? My guess is he might not choose to live in a dorm with a bunch of 18-year-olds.
Right. Yeah.
And so that's something else to consider, but that's not going to matter in the admissions process. I think they're going to be more concerned with how he did when he was a student before and what he has done since then.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yes, Bernadette, thank you very much. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. But, I mean, if you were a person who was 42 or 43 and you have never been, you're still considered a pure freshman?
Well, because what happens is when you talk about freshman versus transfer student, really all that is an evaluation of the number of credits you have taken.
Uh-huh.
So if you have taken credits at another college, you are a transfer student. Mm-hmm. If you have not, you are a freshman. And freshman doesn't necessarily mean you're 18 years old and right out of high school.
Right.
It's just counting credits.
So there could be a 75-year-old freshman, theoretically.
Absolutely.
Okay, let's go to Kathleen in Massachusetts. You're on.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm just a little nervous, but I kind of have two questions. But the most important question is I want to start going to grad school. Well, right now I'm taking a course, but I'm not matriculated yet, so I can't get a Stafford loan.
Right.
Which is fine. Like I'm kind of testing the waters for this. I'm thinking of becoming an ESL teacher.
Okay.
I'm really interested in science and art, but I noticed in those two fields, you know, if I want to study sea turtles, everybody wants to do that, and it doesn't pay very well. And
mm-hmm.
right now I'm, like, almost 42, and it's like I've got to think of my future a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the biggest thing is how do I know, like, I don't mind the thought of being an ESL teacher. What I'm more concerned about is I'm going to pay this money. Is it going to get me a job? Is it really going to get me a job? Like, it's not my dream job, but is it going to, am I going to be able to do it?
Right.
And the second question is, like, even though I have a bachelor's degree, I'm working 3 part-time jobs. I don't know if it's because of, like, it just seems like it's an economic thing in our country, but maybe I'm not trying hard enough, whatever. But the thing is I don't make a lot of money right now.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I don't mind doing the Stafford loan if this is going to get me a job, but I'm also concerned about scholarships, and I like to do that, and I don't mind putting the time in, even though it's a lot of time, but it's like, which ones do I go for? What are the chances of getting them? Or I don't even know where to start.
Well, I actually think you've started in the perfect places, and I think that you're thinking about this exactly the right way. I'll answer the easier question first, which is, if you want to look for scholarships, where do you go? And that is, if you were on earlier, you heard me mention some websites that have scholarship search databases on them. One of them is called My College Options. There's another one called FastWeb.
Yep, I heard of those.
Yep, and so if you go into something like FastWeb and you key in some vitals about yourself, it will tell you, are there any scholarships that match this criteria? Your challenge is going to be that you already have a first bachelor's degree. That doesn't mean it's not worth trying. And I think you raise a point that isn't raised quite often enough, and that is, you go for this degree, can you actually get a job? I think, you know, when somebody's 18 years old or 16, 17 years old, we say to them, what do you want to do? And then we tell them, okay, well, here's a college for you. But oftentimes we're not looking at, well, where are the job trends? Who are they hiring? And in fact, in teaching, in some respects, there are not openings. There are some exceptions to that, and my understanding is that ESL is one of them. So math, science, special ed, and ESL. I would actually look at the Occupational Outlook handbook. It's online. It's a federal document. And it tells you all about different fields and the outlook for them. And it's actually a resource that I use. So the Occupational Outlook Handbook. And you should be able to get a little more information on employability as an ESL teacher.
Kathleen, we got to take a break here. I'm overdue, but thank you very much for the call. Linnell Engelmeyer is our guest. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. We'll hit the lightning round coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from Smith College Museum of Art, presenting Drawn to Excellence, Renaissance to Romantic Drawings from a private collection, works from the 16th to early 19th century, smith.edu/artmuseum. New York State Tobacco-Free Community Partners, working to reduce youth and adult smoking rates across the state and help save lives. New York State Tobacco-Free Community Partners at smokefreecapital.org. Dam Cafe and Deli, Saugerties, New York, serving breakfast and lunch with chef-created soups, salads, vegetarian options, and homemade desserts. Catering services available, thedamcafeanddeli.com. TSL Time and Space Limited, Hudson, New York, screening independent movies at the Met Opera, Les Lacier de More, with Anna Netrebko, timeandspace.org. The Hospitals of HealthQuest and HealthQuest Medical Practice, physicians offering primary and specialty health care in private office settings throughout the Hudson Valley, 1-888-525-4767 for appointments. And Ruggie's Subaru in the Village of Rhinebeck, new Subarus and over 150 pre-owned vehicles, specializing in Subaru and GM vehicles, service and parts. RugiesSubaru.com.
1-800-348-2551, the telephone number. It is Vox Pop. Linnell Engelmeyer with us once again. We go to Dana in Deerfield. Dana, you're on.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have kind of an unusual situation. I have a daughter who's 12, and she is very motivated and exceptional in school. And my husband and I are kind of concerned with her lofty goals of finishing college by the time she's 18.
Wow.
And we have kind of put her in a program, a virtual school program right now, because the school in which we thought best for her could not provide her the educational, accelerated classes that, you know, so she can move quicker, and that's her goal. And I'm a little concerned that she's not going to probably go through the traditional, high school type environment, and I'm concerned of her going to, college at such a young age. And I'm looking for maybe some guidance as to, I want to be supportive of her, and I don't want to hold her back, but I'm really worried about her being so young in a college environment, and I was hoping maybe you can help us.
I share your concern. I think it's a very legitimate one, and I think you have to look at maturity, not just of your 12-year-old, because it sounds like she probably, is maybe a little more mature than the average 12-year-old. But I think you also have to look at the maturity of that 12, 13, 14-year-old on a college campus amongst other 18-year-olds. Because what they are discussing, what they are doing at 18 is very, very different than what she is doing at 12, 13, 14. You know what? Frankly, I don't like when my middle schooler has to go on the high school bus for music in the morning because it's the high school bus. And for that very reason. And so I think it is a very real concern. But I also, share your concern with why stop somebody who's motivated. And there may be a little bit of a middle ground. When I was at, Ray mentioned I was at something called NACAC about a week and a half ago in Denver, which is a large national conference. One of the places there, it's called Simon's Rock. Yeah. It's part of Bard. It is in the Berkshires. And what they offer is an, I don't know exactly how, what their phrase is to explain it, but it's really for kids that for academic or maturity reasons have kind of outgrown high school.
And
they can start college early. So it's not like, okay, you've sent your kid to boarding school. Basically, they skip, sometimes it's just 12th grade, sometimes it's 11th and 12th grade. They go to Simon's Rock, and they are college students.
Wow.
And are starting on a 4-year degree. And that may be one thing to look at.
Interesting.
Very good.
The other thing that I would consider looking at that I think is probably a safer bet at her age are some, if you have access to a community college.
Mm-hmm.
I think that might provide a couple things. Number one, it might be a good reality check for her. Does she belong in this environment the way that she thinks she does?
Right.
And it might be and at a reasonably lower cost, so it's not quite as risky on your part.
Right.
But it does give her some extra challenges. You know, the other thing is, I'm not really sure, like, why does she want to graduate by 18? Because I have to tell you, if the answer is then she goes out and enters the world of work, I think we'd all sit here and agree, yeah, don't rush it.
Take your time.
Yeah. You know, maybe she wants to move the goal. So instead of finishing college by 18, does she want to, you know, look at a larger degree, something that, you know, takes a little longer that she could work towards? If all of this, you know, if you sent her to a community college and she realizes, yeah, okay, I'm not ready for this environment, which is not to say that she's not ready for it academically, but
right.
for any variety of reasons, she's not ready for it. The one thing I really would encourage her to do is to find an interest, to find a passion, and to really pursue it so that by the time she is maybe even 17 and she says, okay, now I want to go to college, she's got something to present to them that is original, that she has delved into. Ray and I talked a minute ago about depth in an area versus depth and or versus breadth, sorry. And this would be a perfect example. And I think she'd have something really impressive to take with her if she did that. And there are summer programs out there that will support this kind of thing that, again, might be a good compromise.
Yeah. Dana, thanks a lot for the call. You know, but supposing she did go to even community college and got some credits,
mm-hmm.
then she realizes, oh, no, I'm going back to high school.
Mm-hmm.
Then when she's going to 4-year college proper, she's no longer a true freshman and loses the chance for a lot of federal money.
She doesn't because, first of all, she's still an undergraduate. She doesn't have a degree.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and that's the big thing.
Yeah.
What the question that you then ask is she a true freshman? And what happens is if you go out and you take a class at a community college, you have not been part of a degree granting institution. And oftentimes you'll get a lot of high school kids that get credit for a high school class through a college and they're still counted as true freshmen. So that would be kind of on a case by case basis. But she would not preclude herself from grant money because she's still an undergraduate.
OK, we go to Jane in Hyde Park. Jane, you're on.
Hi. Yes, I'm calling about the CSS financial aid form.
Mm-hmm.
I have a son who's applying early decision to a very competitive private college,
mm-hmm.
university, and I'm in the process of filling out the form. And a lot of the questions are very, you know, as you know, very detailed and very specific. And I'm just wondering, how do they verify any of this information? Is it just on the honor code, or do they actually go out and find out if your sibling has investment somewhere? Or I'm just was wondering about
that. Good question.
That's a really good question. And I guess much of it is, in fact, I think you signed something wait before you send it in saying the information I have provided is accurate to the best of my knowledge kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Where they can verify it is, so let's just go down the road of saying your son gets accepted early decision to this particular school. You will now have to fill out the FAFSA, the Free Application for Federal Student Aid, which everybody has to fill out. And schools' policies vary. At a bare minimum, that school has to verify, and that is actually a word with a federal definition, verify 30% of the financial aid applicants at that college. If you are in that 30%, they will ask you for your tax returns, and they will ask your son for his, and they will compare what you put on the FAFSA to what is on your tax return, which means, of course, then they can also compare it to what is on your profile. Now, there are questions on the profile that cannot be answered on a tax return, like the how much money is in your brother's, younger little brother's account kind of thing. So theoretically, you know, can they verify everything? No, not really. But, you know, I think you run a big risk if you are. And the college I used to work at, we actually verified 100% of our aid applicants. So we asked for tax returns from everybody. Okay. And there are schools that still do that.
Well, they're asking for tax returns from last year, right up front, you know, with the CSS form. So, you know, obviously every year I work for myself, so it varies. But so, you know, you try your best to base for 2012 what you think is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I just find it a little daunting, the whole thing.
Well, and especially self-employed and that form are probably the most daunting of them, and I wish you lots of luck on it.
Oh, boy.
Yes, thank you.
Jane, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go over to Susan and Lennox. Susan, you're on.
Yes, hi, thank you.
Sure.
I'm going to try to make this as quick as possible. Our daughter is a very committed and relatively talented ballet dancer. Attended 2 years in the local public high school, and then her junior year went to a private school for the arts that allowed her to do more dancing, and also it was a strong academic school. Then decided to come home for her senior year and finish out at her local public school.
Mm-hmm.
Problem was that the local public school ranks their students upon graduation, and because the private school did not have descriptors for the classes, such as honors or college prep,
mm-hmm.
They weighted all her classes at the prep school as college prep.
Mm-hmm.
So here she was, you know, honors for her first 2 years, then bam, junior year, college prep, then senior year back to honors, and it ended up totally tanking her ranking.
Okay.
In addition to which, they did not submit the prep school transcript separately. They combined it into their transcript with only a header on
mm-hmm.
that one section.
Okay.
This
is actually not a terrible problem to fix. It's probably
okay.
A little bit more of a headache than anything else, because it's gonna take you a couple phone calls. The first thing I would do if I were you is I would call the arts school, okay, so the
mm-hmm.
junior year school. And
yeah.
I would very specifically have them send a transcript for your daughter to this particular
yeah.
college. Normally,
okay, so under separate cover.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Normally, they ask for every high school transcript separately anyway, okay? So that's number one. The other thing
right.
is when you ask them to send that, they should have something called a school profile.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
And generally what happens, and more so for the junior year school I would care about it. But, you know, what happens is it should say, this is what our curriculum looks like. This is
yeah.
what our offerings look like. And it will give the admissions officer who's reading this a little more background in what it is that they're looking at. That's the
right.
first thing I would do. The
okay.
second thing I would do is I would write a letter there. You're not going to get the high school transcript fixed, and my guess is you're going to spend a lot of time and effort trying, and you're probably not going to get all that far because
right.
they have a policy, and probably you're not going to change that.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
what I think the admissions office will be very attuned to
mm-hmm.
is the explanation. And I think
mm-hmm.
if you write an explanation just very factual about this is how the public school treated it, and
mm-hmm.
this is why the class rank looks like it does, they'll
mm-hmm.
get it. They'll get it.
But we send that letter ourselves?
Actually, I think that's, yes. Yes.
Okay.
You guys should send that. You know, your daughter can write it, but they will absolutely
right.
read that. And because this is such a unique case, I would
mm-hmm.
even consider following it up with a phone call just saying, we sent this letter of explanation. Did you get it?
All
okay.
right. Because, you know, it also removed her from consideration for scholarship to UMass. Because of me not being in the top 10% of the class.
Yeah, that might be a little bit of a tougher one. And,
yeah,
but I
yeah.
would talk to UMass in the admissions office, tell
yeah.
them the story. The worst thing you have to lose is a couple minutes of your time.
Okay, Susan,
yeah.
we got to
okay.
run here,
thank
but
you.
Thanks a lot. Okay, April and Watervliet, you have about 35 seconds to pose the question. Linnell has an equal amount of time to answer. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. I'm calling because I am on my last semester at a local four-year college. I just found out that I'm going to be losing this is my last semester for Pell.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea how I'm going to pay for my final semester, which is in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
The first 2 years of my undergrad, I unfortunately, just due to family circumstances, had to drop out of high school. So I spent my first year and a half to 2 years of my associate's degree taking non-credit-bearing classes.
Mm-hmm.
And then Pell was reformed, apparently, over the summer. And now it used to be 18 semesters worth of aid, and now it's 12. I have an EFC of 0, and I'm already maxed out with loans every term in order to cover the expenses of school. I don't know how I'm going to cover this last semester.
All right, April, okay. Big question, 30 seconds.
Okay, so for the years that I have been in financial aid, Pell has been 8 semesters. You sound like you're counting on trimesters. But in my world, it's always been 8 semesters or 4 years. And honestly, other than doing it, are you a full-time student?
Yes, ma'am, I am.
Look at the cost of taking that one semester over 2 semesters and dropping to part-time status. It may be disproportionately cheaper.
April, that's it, and thank you so much for calling. And thanks to everybody who called in today. Sorry if you didn't make it through. Lynell Engelmeyer, the new website is collegeappwizard.com, collegeappwizard.com. We will see you again, hopefully sooner rather than later.
That sounds great to me.
Support for WAMC comes from United Way of the Greater Capital Region, Albany, New York. Investing in education, financial stability, and health, UnitedWayGCR.org. The Olana Partnership and Olana State Historic Site, presenting Olana's dynamic landscape, contemporary works by Hudson Valley photographer Peter Aaron in the Coachman's House, open daily through October, Olana.org. Joy Els Jewelers, Del Mar, New York, specializing in custom jewelry and repair, laser welding, designer jewelry and gifts, joyelsjewelers.com. And Shakespeare & Company, presenting New York's spoof, The 39 Steps, Hitchcock Gone Haywire, now through November 4th, shakespeare.org. Thanks to Colleen O'Connell, who answered the call, Zachary Malloy, who he was at the controls. That's right. Patrick Donge is our producer. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on Vox Pop, says here, it's birding with Rich Guthrie. Caw, caw, caw. That's always fun. Stay tuned now for a news update.